What I want people to know about my mom is that she's still there. Maybe she looks a little different when she is, you know, in a conversation with you. Maybe she walks a little different. Maybe she's a little slower, but she's still there.
I'm Edith, and I'm from Brantford, Connecticut. My first symptoms that I noticed was my handwriting. It was really getting very small, and so I couldn't write in cursive. I had to print everything. And that was the first sign, and the second sign was swimming, because I love to swim. And I found that I couldn't float, and I couldn't keep my legs up. I first saw the neurologist in 2017, which was a year after I retired. And I was not diagnosed with MSA until probably 2019. I actually saw 5 doctors in total, but it was probably the 4th doctor who told me that I had an MSA. So the first time that I went to see a doctor or realized that I had a problem, I really thought it was a brain tumor. He said he thought that I might have Parkinson's, and he had scheduled me for a DAT scan, and that came back negative. So the doctor told me that I did not have Parkinson's because I had a negative DAT scan, and he sent me to one of his colleagues to be examined. And the colleague then said that I had a cortical basal degeneration. I found another neurologist who, she just said, you have Parkinson's with a negative DAT scan. And she was the one down in Florida that said, I need to see a movement disorder doctor. The movement disorder doctor is the first one who diagnosed me with the MSA. Up until then, the other neurologists were saying that I had Parkinson's. When the doctor finally diagnosed me with MSA, it was trying to find information online about it, which was very difficult. With going through the journey, I was in denial because I wasn't having any symptoms at the beginning that you could really see on the outside. It's only been in the last probably 2 years where my balance has been off, and I was falling quite frequently. Right when I was diagnosed, I could walk properly without any assistance. And really after the hospital stay for UTI, my walking became worse, and I needed assistance. That's when the symptoms really started, and I had to accept the fact that I had the disease. I wish the doctor had explained more that it was going to come on, and when it came on, it was going to be very to do what I wanted to do with all my facilities without falling. And I wish that the doctor had explained that they would be more rampant once they started. So I would like people to realize how debilitating the disease becomes at different increments. It started out with the falling, and then it becomes where your balance is really bad. And now I realize it has affected my speech. I try to walk about 4 miles a day, between 4 and 7 miles a day. And it helps with the disease. It's keeping it more at bay, supposedly to the doctor's orders. And the doctor will always say to me that he wishes he had more patients that would do more exercise like I'm doing.
I didn't realize how important that was to MSA patients to keep moving. I tend to want to put my mom in a bubble and not have anything hurt her and, oh, don't do that, you shouldn't do that. But how important it is to have that, to keep moving.
I would tell other patients that have MSA to do what you can do while you have your facilities about you. They go really fast when it starts. You do have a couple of years where you have no symptoms, and to enjoy those years while you have them.
Hi, I'm Daisy.
Hi, I'm David.
And we're the MSA Crusaders. Hello, listeners. We're here today with some very special guests, and I would want to go ahead and tell you to get your tissues ready. I got mine handy. So we're going to talk with Jennifer Frost. She is Defeat MSA Alliance Vice President. Along with her, we have her sister, Andrea O'Neill. Glad to have you on, girls. Thanks for coming in. It's been
You're
so
welcome.
Good.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, thank you, Daisy. Thank you, David. Pleasure to be here.
Great. I want to start with each of you. What do you do for fun, and what do you do for work?
Let me go ahead. I'm a nurse, and I currently work in a university health clinic in Boston.
That's Andrea, by the way.
Oh yeah, sorry, Andrea. And for fun, I love music and seeing sunrises or sunsets.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm a patient care coordinator at a therapy center. That's a new role for me after my caregiving role. I'm the same as my sister, live music, being outside, sunrises, sunsets, and being with family. Those are my go-tos.
And ice cream.
Oh yeah.
Don't forget the ice cream with the sunset. That's perfect. So you both have a little bit of a medical experience, it sounds like.
We do. Yep.
So that was probably helpful in your caregiving times.
Yes and no, because, you know, you have the medical knowledge, and then sometimes when your loved one needs help, sometimes that goes out the window, and that's where me and my sister make such a great team. You know, we balance each other out of that aspect. But it is helpful for sure.
Definitely talking with doctors and medical, you know, lingo as you go to
yes.
appointments. But I think in both of our jobs throughout our careers, we also are fixers. So taking care of someone that you love that has a terminal disease is something you can't fix. So that was challenging, I would say.
Right. I'm learning.
I can see that. And I also see how being a nurse, going to the visits with your mom was helpful. Getting that lingo and mm-hmm. being able to translate that to her, because mm-hmm. my mom's a nurse and she goes with me to all my visits. So
you understand that. That's helpful.
Yes.
And Jennifer and I, anything we went to appointments with, we always had pen and notebook and took notes. Mm-hmm. So just in case, it was helpful for both of us, like, to have documentation when a doctor said something.
To make sure we heard it the right way.
We heard it the right way and write it down, or looking it up, or take, you know, investigate some more, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff.
And then you could tell each other if the other one wasn't there, what exactly was said.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Smart. Very smart.
Make a good team.
Sounds like it. Your mom has some great caregivers.
No, we had a great mom.
So tell us a little bit about your mom.
Go ahead, you can start it off.
Well, my mom worked for a pharmaceutical company for many years. She was an integral part. She was one of the founding members. What did it start with? 10?
Not even.
Yeah. So her circle through work, she had a really strong faith through church. She was very giving and supportive. Every holiday that we were around, there was a, we always kind of joke, she would bring in a mystery guest. Anyone that was going to be by themselves, she would invite them over.
She was very active. She was known to, she would just walk for miles and miles and miles. She was very active, she loved to travel, and she treated everyone the same, whether you had a cent to your name or $10 million. Like, everyone was treated the same way. She loved hard and big, and she was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Very sweet. Mm-hmm. And what was her name?
Edith Huzar. Or D.
most people call her D.
Yeah. Or as our kids love, Grandma D.
Grandma D, yeah.
Well, where was your favorite place to travel to?
When she retired, she lived, I had a place in Florida. So she loved going part-time to Florida. I don't know where her favorite, she really got into the Viking cruises. So mm-hmm. she traveled everywhere. But she always, this is an example of who she was. I lived in Michigan at the time. My sister lives in Massachusetts. She would come spend Christmas with me and my daughter at Michigan, and my niece, her birthday's New Year's Eve. She'd fly from my house to go to my sister's to make sure she was there for her birthday. And like, that's what she did. She, you know, she was always there. I mean, she was that person that showed up for everything.
She, if you called her up, it wasn't like, let me check. She's like, what time do you want me there?
No.
Oh, that is so sweet.
Yeah, we're very fortunate.
Yeah. She's, we miss her.
Yeah.
And when was she diagnosed?
Okay. That was
with MSA or like when symptoms started?
Both. There you go, both.
I think the symptoms like really, she shared with us, let's say 2017.
Yeah.
Right. And then it probably not until 2019 did we, after six or seven, five doctors, six providers. So by 2019, she was diagnosed with MSA at the beginning, right? Or did
no,
we go wrong with yours?
2017, we knew she had it, right? It was right after our dad got diagnosed with cancer, and my mom didn't say anything while we dealt with my dad's illness. She kept that to herself and didn't want to hurt us with that. And it was right, my dad passed away. It's been 7 years. That's when
2000. Yeah.
Yep. So that's when we started focusing. Okay, what's going on with you? We knew stuff was going on. That's who my mom is. Didn't want to burden us.
That is something that is very, beyond words, that a woman who has been given the death sentence withholds it on purpose in a loving way to focus on what's more important at that time, the father, her husband, your father. That's just extraordinary. That's wow.
So that says who she was.
Right. So she was dealing with all Park, you know, and then we get them, you know, and then I think it helped her a lot to share with us, and then we go into our daughter mode of I remember we got together, I had my spreadsheet of every possible thing from start to finish at MSA, and we went through every step of what could happen.
Mm-hmm. It had to be hard losing your father and then having to turn around and know your mom's face with a terminal disorder.
Yeah, it was, but I think of just who we are as families and what our mom has taught us, you know, you just always give back. You're there for others. Like we're caretakers, caregivers. Like that's who we are by nature. So
you're strong.
Yeah. So I think that's okay, here we go. This is what we're faced is. We're realists. We communicate, you know, like here we go. Let's hit the ground running on what we are to expect and what each step of the way is going to look like for us.
Well, you have to be strong to have dealt with that.
Yeah, no, Jen flew in. It was Labor Day weekend.
Yep.
And the three of us sat down together. You know, we had done the research that you had done in MSA and what could happen. And so you had like the terms written out.
Yep.
And we sat with my mom and basically went through her wishes. When this happens, mom, what do you want to do? For an example, we talked about like the healthcare proxy and the DNR status. We talked about feeding tubes.
Do you want to be in a home? Do you want to die at home? Do you want to, who you want to take care of you? Like we went through
assisted living.
Yeah. Everything.
So all her advanced directives.
Yep.
And then we wrote it out and Jen created another sheet of my mom's wishes. Because my mom was a big planner.
Yep.
When we went away, she always had the manila folder.
The itinerary.
Yep.
Very organized.
Yeah.
And I think that was the beginning for my mom of a disease that she didn't ask for and you really have no control over. I felt like that she finally had say in her life. And we were backing her.
Whatever she wanted to do, we were right there with her.
So she knew it was MSA before she told y'all.
No, she was going through, could it be Parkinson's? Could it be the brain? Yeah, she was going through. Something was going on, but not pinpointed of.
So she didn't know it was a terminal at that time?
No.
Yeah, she something was not right. Because I think before our dad passed, you were in Florida with her and she
She started falling a lot.
We saw some things that were a little off.
The handwriting was a little shaky. The gait was off. You know, little things that you don't think of until
after you get the diagnosis of, oh, was this back?
Yeah.
Back when that happened, you know, falls that normally shouldn't happen.
Excuse that, and that's with Parkinson's first.
Yes. Well, they even said before that there was a question of brain tumor. Oh. I think she had the normal DAT scan.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Yeah, they mentioned mine very early on with the ALS that brain tumors could be causing some of that too. So yeah, they did a lot of MRIs looking for brain tumors as well for me. So yeah, it's pretty common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
And even like if you even go back in her history, so probably 2014 or 15, she had a benign growth on her uterus, which was on her bowels that ended up being benign. But at the same time, my mom has always had like a, what would you say, small bladder most of her life. Mm-hmm. And she had the GYN part of the surgery, and then a urologist came in to do the bladder lift.
Okay.
And then, so she ended up, apparently during the surgery, she ended up being on the table for 10 hours. And wow. When she came out of the surgery, she never came back 100%, right? Right. Would you say? And the other thing that was concerning was her bladder wasn't better. If anything, it was worse.
And it was one of those things where it was probably an unnecessary surgery. It was probably MSA, you know. But, you know, as doctors, they fix, you have a urine problem, let's fix that. You have a bladder problem, let's fix that without looking at the whole.
Yeah.
And then us, yeah. And then with us being in the medical field, I was like, Mom, this doesn't sound right. Like the bladder issues, the infections, like you shouldn't still be having these this far out post-op. And then.
So it's kind of when you get that diagnosis, you're like, okay, that makes sense. Okay. You know, what's it still? You still don't understand it, but it makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. So Jennifer, can you share a little bit about your experience as a caregiver for your mom with MSA, and including how long you provided her care?
I moved. The plan was my mom wanted to be taken care of at home. She wanted to be at home for me to take care of her. Like that was okay, make it happen. I lived in Michigan. I was like, to say the word, I'm moving back. Like that was always the plan. My daughter came out here from Michigan to school. So she lived with my mom for a little bit. And my mom, like as you're a mom, you hold stuff back. Like we check in with her, how are things? Oh, I'm fine. And still my daughter was here like, okay, you girls, you and Auntie Annie need to come out. Like this is, she's not letting you in on how much is going on. So my daughter kind of was the one to say, all right, Grandma D's keeping stuff from you in a loving way as a mom would do. So I got myself packed up, closed my life down in Michigan and came here. And we purchased a home together. And as I researched everything. I knew what was going to happen from now until the end of her life. I knew each stage we're going to go to, and I'd rather be prepared ahead of time. So we made the house very safe. She wasn't in a wheelchair. She was still walking on her own, but we had the ramps. We had the zero entry shower. We had everything set so we could just move in and be ready to go on each stage that presented to us with MSA. That's just who we are. We plan. I'm a planner. I like to know what's coming. And as with MSA, you don't really know.
I agree. I want to know what's in front of me. I do not like surprises at all. I hate surprises. We call it birthdays or anniversaries. I hate surprises just in life in general. So I can understand when it comes to MSA. It's like, wow, I can't possibly, you know, project or
not be surprised.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Every step.
And that's where I feel like, you know, and when I came back, my mom, like we knew what was going on, but she didn't let a lot of people know what was going on. Like she didn't want to burden anyone, let anyone know. So me and my sister decided, Mom, let's have like an awareness walk. Like, let's let your friends and our family know what's going on. Like, we're going to need help. We're going to need support. You're going to need support. So that's when we got involved with Defeat MSA. We wanted to do a walk for our mom, and Defeat MSA Alliance was a huge resource for us. So we had a walk for my mom the first year we were back, and that was amazing.
She was really excited because walking was something she did every day. when she first saw the movement disorder, he said, and she took it literally.
Yeah. She had every Fitbit known to man on her arm, measuring her steps and miles. And
she was told to walk every day.
And that's what she did.
And that's what she did. That's literally, I think, some days kept her going. Like towards the end, we call it the MSA walk, where my mom and sister live. We call it the MSA walk. It's what we did for our awareness walk. And some of those walks we do with my mom, I don't know how she did it.
But she was doing it because she was told
she had a walk.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going.
Her blood pressure was probably dropping. She was having all those symptoms, but she did it.
Determined.
Yeah.
Pushed through.
Yeah.
And I swear we are firm believers that is what helped her.
Yeah.
Deal
with MSA and live for a long time with it. And
yeah, that's. They say a body in motion says emotion.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So. I'm a firm believer. Like, I wanted her to live her life, live with MSA. I didn't want her MSA to define her. I wanted her to kick MSA, show people it's okay. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm saying it the right way, but
no, you are. Yeah. No, like,
you are.
Jen was an amazing caretaker. Like, they had their calendars in the morning. So if I come and visit them, they both would pull out their phone calendars and they would talk about, okay, mom, Joanne's coming over today. And then later we're going to go to the green, the jazz is playing. So like every morning you guys would discuss
who was coming over.
And it was nice. My mom had some really nice friends that would come over throughout my mom's illness as she went along. Like, she couldn't talk as much, or she's very quiet, harder to understand. She couldn't walk, you know, she was more seated, but she had a friend that came over once a week, or there's a few of them who came, and she brought her a lemon treat.
And they had coffee.
Her friend would come over for an hour.
Like, and she looked forward to
it. She looked forward to it. And that was until she passed.
Yeah, she had her group of poker girls, we called them. They didn't really play poker, but
that was the big one. Summer she had her poker girls night here. And so all of the grandchildren are here and they were like, all right,
they couldn't wait to play poker. And they're like, wait, they're not playing poker.
Look at all the Breeze girls.
Yeah.
So I think my mom, it really, like, as she became, I don't want to say debilitated, what's the word I want to say? Like, maybe harder to understand, less mobile, being part, even if it was just sitting in a chair watching activities, or like I said, of a friend coming over, bringing over a treat and giving an update about church, that just meant the world to her. Like, I think it's important for caregivers to invite people over, like, keep living. Like, maybe the way you're living, you have to change a little bit because of whatever your disability is. But to share, you know, Jen and I are very open people, but like, to share what the disease looks like to friends, there's some people who aren't in the medical field or don't have access to the internet. And don't understand what MSA is. So,
and it's very sad when you go out and you hear them say, oh, you look better. You look like you're doing better. You know,
it's hard. Yeah. It's we've had difficult conversation with friends and family to say, okay, this is the disease. This is not my mom. Don't take it personally. This is what we're going through. And then it's up to them what they want to do. But that's just us, you know, this is what's ahead of us. Be part of it or you don't have to. Like, it's not for everybody. So, but I was big. Like, I made sure my mom had her hair done. You know, she looked good, dressed good. So we could go out. I was never afraid to take her out. My mom was always, I don't sound the same. I'm walking slow. And I'm like, it's okay. Let people stare. Let people, you're allowed to live your life. People want to ask questions, go ahead. But you know, you're representing.
And I wanted to bring up, Jen was great as, because my mom pretty much till this summer before she died, she would
brush her teeth, get dressed herself.
Yep.
So as the disease progressed, like Jen saw, like, for example, she couldn't button pants anymore. So Jen would go online and look for pull-on pants.
Yep.
Or as she lost weight, you know, Jen would get clothes that looked better on her. Because Jen was very like, your clothes are too big, they're aging you.
Like, we were like, we grew up with a mom who never wore sweatpants. Like, she was always in heels, you know?
Yeah.
Like, real classy.
Yeah.
And I think it meant a lot to my mom to still be able to dress herself. So for like, so Jen like kept up on clothes that were like shoes that she could put on herself, the shoes that you just put your, you know, your feet in, she didn't have to tie, or like the is it a shoehorn? Am I saying the right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think the thing that you put
in. Like the little things for, you know, just for activities of daily living, like Jen, you guys were, and that was part of research too. You would find
right. I think we both, yeah.
Microfeel as independent as possible.
Yep.
Yeah.
She loved swimming in our pool. So she had trouble getting in, but we got a little chair. We made it able, like, you get in the pool every day. You go take your nap in the pool every day. Like, that's okay. And it made her feel, I'm swimming in the pool every day, you know.
Yeah. Aquatic therapy, it makes a huge difference.
That's what I hear. Yes.
Yeah, I take aquatic therapy every week. And I mean,
so good for you.
It's just, well, I have a super pure catheter. So we get to plug it off and put it in, you know, the waterproof edge. And I can feel free, you know.
Yeah, I bet.
I don't have a cord. I'm free.
You're not tethered.
Not tied down, yeah. So I can imagine if she was able to swim every day, that really probably helped her too as well.
Yeah, she enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Obviously not in the winter. It wasn't heated.
Yeah, can't be swimming in an unheated pool, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm from Florida, I know, trust me.
Yeah.
Andrea, how did you cope with the emotional and the physical challenges of caregiving for your mom?
Well, I couldn't have gotten through it without Jennifer.
I mean,
yeah, we would, you know, cry. I would say definitely laughter.
Yes.
And my mom's sense of humor got a lot better.
And honestly, I think coming on here with David once or twice a week, it really helps me with the laughter, because we do a lot of laughing on our show.
Well, I do a lot of laughing at you, Daisy.
Well, I can see that. But
real, right?
When he laughs at me, I laugh at him, because
it's a win-win.
It's a win-win, exactly.
Yeah. So definitely laughter. I mean, I have to admit, I had trouble coping with it. Worse, believe it or not, than Jen did. But she grounded me. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not going to save mom. We can't fix her. And it was really hard, because our mom's a very strong woman, and she fixed stuff for us all the time. Yeah. It's supportive. Yeah. So we definitely got through it together, and we like bounce things off each other.
Yep.
Too. And you know, and like our father unfortunately passed away right before my mom's disease got worse. And we learned a lot from that. Like, he had a terminal disease too. So we kind of picked up on, we wish we had done this. Yep. And like, if we ever have to do hospice again, we're going to definitely whatever. So,
and it was always with our mom, like our mom was included in these times. I feel blessed that we were able to do what we did with our mom and together, like,
mm-hmm.
The three of us. It was a good trio.
Yeah. My mom was definitely a realist about it. So it was great, like, having open conversations about end of life decisions.
Because, you know, her thing was, I know they're not going to have a cure for my life, but I hope they have a cure by the time my grandkids, you know, like,
yes.
That's her thinking. Like, she was big into study me, research me. I will talk to whoever. I will do whatever. Learn from me. Here's my brain. Learn about this. Let's help others. Like, mm-hmm. And she wanted to speak about what she was going through, that it's okay. Like, I'm dying. It's okay. You know, but let's stop it. Like, learn from me so other people don't have to go through what I'm going through.
That's great. That's awesome. But she has such a big heart.
Mm-hmm.
And she was at peace with knowing that she was not going to win the battle.
It took her a little, she, you know, she, of course, and I can't imagine, I can't speak for her, just of what she said to us. She had her phases of angry, and, you know, she's very angry for a while. It took her a while to get to that point of, okay, there's nothing I can do, you know, except,
I think she sets the tone though. I mean, I like to think I'm like her in the sense, you know, setting the tone from the beginning saying, look, we're not going to beat this. It's not going to be nice. This is what's going to happen. We can't control it. So let's get past all this emotional, put this emotional stuff to the side. Mm-hmm. This, all this fantasy about a cure in my lifetime or whatever is not going to help, right? What's going to help is live the life the best we can and hoping for the best down the road, you know? Yeah. So I think that, I think she, from what I hear, she definitely set the tone to get us, to get you, the whole family, mentally prepared for things like this.
Absolutely. And I think you just hit the nail on the head with that. She did. And to say it was okay. It's okay. It's okay to go through this with me. It's okay to see me. I wouldn't say suffer, because she would never say, I don't think she suffered.
No,
it's hard to say, but you know.
Maybe internally. Yeah.
Yeah, internally. But I don't think, and I think you're always a mom regardless. And I don't think she would let us know that.
She didn't have physical pain that she would endure.
Just, I would say the last week of her life, probably September is when she was wheelchair bound, the September before she passed away. And we always knew once she couldn't walk, that would probably be the beginning of like the real decline. And she never complained of pain. And she always said, Thanksgiving is going to be my last holiday. Thanksgiving's going to be, we were like, okay. And we did. We had a phenomenal Thanksgiving. We had a house full of people. She sat there. She was sat in her chair, and it was amazing. We went to the tree lighting on the green. And then that week, she had her poker girls over. And then she was like, I'm in pain. I can't do this anymore. And that was the last week of her life. Like, she just called the shots from.
She knew.
It's fascinating how many people, how many stories I've heard personally of, like, people know what they're going to go. Like, they just call it spiritual, call it whatever you want to, but it's absolutely crazy how people know when that time is coming.
Yep. And she was really big on her faith. Her pastor came over once a week and sat with her. I think that was a major part of helping her. I think she helped him. They helped each other, you know, speaking of what's to come and her comfort. And she,
the choir came over and sang Christmas carols to her. And they wrote,
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That really helps a lot. I try to tell, you know, people that, I mean, on Heaven's Gates book I wrote, it talks about, you know, what I've seen in glimpses of where we go, how we live after this. And that gives me a somewhat peaceful, knowing that I'm going there, you know.
Yep. I like her last week of life. Just I remember we joke around a lot. Even her last week of life, she had her hand up in the air. I'm like, "Do you have a question? Are you asking me a question?" she laughed and she's like, "It's so beautiful. It is so beautiful." That's what she kept saying. So like that gave me peace. Like she was embracing the neck, like she even still, like, we're learning from her, like she wasn't scared. It was a comfort.
Exactly. It gives us comfort in knowing where we're going.
Absolutely.
And to back up, so this before she passed, her pastor, they had I had never been to one before, but they created a living memorial mass for my mom. So it was a mass she was part of that we brought her to. And how many people spoke about? Four or five people of her church each got up and had a story about
a little eulogy.
And it was amazing as a daughter to hear other people, like,
see what we see.
Respecting and loving my mom is like what we know, and that she got to hear it, because with all the planning we did for the end of life with hospice, you know, she picked, I mean,
Jen went to the funeral home. They picked out her urn. I mean, she picked, she planned everything. Just so my mom, but for her to be part of, like, hearing how loved you are before, it must have just bought her peace, and it definitely helped me.
Oh, that's neat. You know, that kind of stuff's all put together now.
Yeah, and they played music, and like from that, she's like, I want that song played at my funeral mass.
Right.
And I'm not calling it a funeral. I'm calling it a celebration of life.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have, yeah. But I would highly recommend that for families to do, if you can, but to bring people to your home and to tell your loved one how much they mean to you. Like, don't wait. Like, tell them now. I think it helped mom so, like, be at peace. And
even if they can't respond and talk back, still tell them. They're still there. You're mentally still there. You're aware. And
I mean, as awful as MSA was for us, it was in a way a gift to, we were able to, we had that time with my mom to spend with her, like, quality time and talk about life.
I tell people all the time, you know, one of my good friends passed away instantly from cardiac arrest, right? And he had no chance to say goodbye. And yet here we are, yes, with a tragic disease, MSA, but we're going to be here with enough time to, you know, say goodbye and be the people we're supposed to be. So, yeah, always thankful that, you know, things could be worse, but having MSA is at the end of your life, like right now. Down the road, right.
That, like, my dad was murdered, so there wasn't.
Oh, wow.
But we have that chance to say goodbye to our family and put them at ease.
And we gave everyone that, you know, we had those hard conversations. As much as my mom presented that she was doing so well, we always told everyone this, say your goodbye, say what you need to say.
What was the most difficult aspect of being, you know, caring for your mom?
I would say watching the decline of someone so independent, watching all the stages. I it's devastating to see somebody go through your body shutting down. And it's as you guys know, it's not something that just all happens at once. It's little by little by little. And that's so hard to watch somebody you love go through. And not being able to fix it. I would say that's really difficult.
And I know you said that she was wheelchair bound before, you know.
Yep, she went from using a cane and then a walker, but she would only use the walker in the house. We called it her in-house walker because she didn't want people to see her with a walker.
And then
she was okay with the walk then. Knew she had to use a walker all the time. So then only until she went on hospice care, we had convinced her to use the wheelchair. Let's save your energy. Use the wheelchair to save your energy for when you want to go out and use your walker. So she really wasn't wheelchair bound till September. And then she passed in December, but she, I think she was lucky in that aspect. I don't really call it lucky, but
yeah. So she was never bed bound then.
Only for her last week of life. That was the only time she was bed bound.
I mean, that's awesome to have at least your mobility. We're losing everything else, but for your mother to have mobility to the very end, I personally could not ask for anything other than that.
Yep. And you're probably, that's how my mom was. Like, that was very important to her. Gave her that little independence.
What type of support did she have, your mother? Was it simply family? You spoke about family, and it sounds like religious as well. Was there any other support groups and communities, medical things like that?
She had a PT she did for a while. He was amazing. She had speech therapy. She was amazing. And when she lived in Florida, I can't say this enough. I wish I can remember her name. I can't remember her name. She went to the gym to, like, work out, and the trainer there researched MSA and learned about MSA to help my mother. And I can't, that just blows my mind that someone would do that. We had that. And then my mom wanted to be under hospice care, so they got to know her. So she was like, what? You're going to be on hospice care? You don't seem like you need to be on hospice care. But
well, tell the story about the first hospice we had in.
We had to fire them.
We, like I said, we were like, let's get hospice now. She has a terminal disease. We decided together with my mom. Yeah.
She wanted them to know her before she was not able to be herself.
I guess. And at this point, my mom was dressing herself. She was going to the pool. You know what I mean?
She was still straight casting herself.
You know, looks great or here. Thanks to Jen. But the first hospice people that came in basically said, I'm paraphrasing, you're not dying enough. She's not ill enough for hospice care. And we're like,
I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're like, we were so like dumbfounded. Like, we were just like, what?
And everything's like, we just want to do what my mom wants to do. And we were just so devastated.
So we told that that hospice to leave. And we talked to my mom. Yeah. My mom had a really good, her primary care provider is a nurse practitioner. And she, like, the light bulb went off. She's like, that's not the only hospice in town. There's Connecticut Hospice. And they're they started hospice in the United States. So they came over
and we were already
had our shoulders up. We're like, okay, is someone else going to tell us our mom's not dying enough for hospice? But they couldn't have been nicer. That. They were so supportive from day one. We're like,
we just wanted, we're the planners. We just wanted the resources on hand. We wanted the oxygen when she needed it. We wanted the wheelchair when she needed it. We wanted mm-hmm. to have that all set up for her, and they mm-hmm. Amazing. We can't say enough about.
They brought in they had music therapy that came in. Is it every two yeah. other
yep.
week?
Art therapy.
And my mom was a little bit hesitant at the beginning. She did not want to do the art and music, and we kind of said, just do it once, and if it's too hokey, they don't have to come back. And she loved it.
They wrote songs awesome. Together. Yeah, so it was nice they got to see my mom as my mom, like not yeah. just a patient who was dying, you know, like it worked. Yeah.
And then it was nice towards the end when my mom kind of fessed up that she couldn't shower by herself. Mm-hmm. They had home health aides, and that was another thing my mom was a bit resistant on, but we're like, try it, mom. Like if it's weird, we don't have to do it. And don't you know, she just made an instant connection with the home health aide, and she looked forward to going in the shower.
Yeah, that was
washing, getting her hair washed, right?
Yep, doing her hair and just that time with her. It was, didn't make her feel like a sick, dying patient. They were just amazing.
Mm-hmm. So I would say hospice was a huge support, and it was nice. They checked in on Jen and I as well, mm-hmm. not just yet. So it was, they incorporated.
That's the thing I like about good hospice is they're not there for the patient. They are there for the family too.
Yep.
Even afterwards.
Agreed. Yeah. Because they had a memorial thing after she passed, like for all hospice patients. And it's nice that how are you doing? Like they remember you, and that's not, you're not just a number, and you know, they have, but you always felt like you were their only patient. Or
yes, sweet.
Client. Yeah. And she had her church as well. A lot of church members were very helpful coming over and mm-hmm. helping and being involved mm-hmm. in her life. That mm-hmm. was helpful for her.
And so very good and good friends. And
great friend support.
You mentioned the healthcare teams. Did you have a lot of discussions with them about how things are going to go and what her wishes and things like that? Or was it very... Yeah,
we started with the PT. And of course, like, no one's heard of MSA. You know,
right.
Literature, here we go. Learn about MSA.
Well, do you remember? I forgot who had it on her paper, her intake, and it said MS.
Yeah, we got that.
We almost went
over. Oh, no.
And that has, I'm sure that's happened to you guys before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it was good. Like, I forgot how together. So the alliance, we have those pamphlets from mm-hmm. the walk. So anyone that came in to meet my mom got there a pamphlet. Go. Yep. This is what MSA is.
You feel that you're more educated to them, don't you?
Yeah.
Some people definitely.
Yeah. I would say anybody who's listening, you know, reach out to us at the Feet MSA Alliance. Like, we will mail you the brochures. Like I brought it to doctor's appointments, like here, like learn about it, you know, don't.
Yeah.
Don't.
I was amazed by the last appointment I had with the scoping of my throat. And I made it the first time I made an appointment for every person I saw, I was going to ask them if they knew what MSA was. Yeah, I didn't say MSA. I said multiple system atrophy. I want to make sure we're on the right. Not MS.
Yep.
I was telling my daughter who was there. I said, three nurses outside, two surgical nurses, two anesthesias, the doctor, and some surgical tech lab. Like none of them. Nobody had ever heard of MSA.
Yep.
I'm so dumbfounded how, you know, it's on all my charts, all my records, and they still. Like what are they looking at when we look at the charts? You know, MSA. It amazes me to this day that they still don't know what it is.
My mom went to get an X-ray done, and she was asking what MSA was. So me and my mom are both telling her what it is. She's like, "Wow, you two are really knowledgeable." I'm like, "Well,
you have to be because the medical teams aren't."
Yeah, and
right.
I think that's so huge for patients. You advocate for yourself, and then your caregivers. You have to advocate. You have to listen.
I think most medical team thinks there's a misprint or somebody accidentally wrote an A there.
Yeah, that's not supposed to be there, right?
So you two seem very, I mean, from the very beginning, involved, your mother, obviously to the end. What word of advice? I don't know if this is on the list of questions here, but I tried to throw too many curveballs. What word of advice would you give for anyone who's in the same situation as yourselves, dealing with either a spouse or a mother, father, someone that has MSA? Knowing what you know now, what you went through, what word of advice would you give somebody for, you know, not to make any missteps that you might have made with MSA?
Yeah, I think communication is huge. I think not enough people communicate about it. I think having those hard conversations, like they're not easy to have, and they're not, even if you don't talk about that stuff normally in life, communicate, talk about what is going on. I think that is so important, and include, like, I'm lucky. I have my sister and we have always been on the same page. I'm so lucky to have that as support, but include your family. Have those talks all together, check in. Like we always had check-ins with my mom, like every few months. Okay, let's go down. Are we still good? You still good with this decision? You still good with this? I think communication is so important.
And don't wait too late. Like don't wait till, you know, because you don't know what the next day is going to be like. So like as soon as your loved one is showing signs, or even if you don't have a clear-cut diagnosis, start having those difficult conversations. Like, and this is what we kind of talked about with the hospice team. Like, they said, like, I wish families talked more openly about dying with dignity and supporting. And a lot of people, it's not an easy thing to talk about dying.
No.
For people. But when you have a terminal illness, you have to. And people with a terminal illness, I'm assuming, sorry, I'm speaking for them.
Yeah.
You feel out of control. You know, you didn't ask for this, and you're kind of dealt with something that you didn't ask for or deserve. And I feel like it was almost, kind of, I don't want to say a gift, but for my mom to take control of the end of her life, like to plan her funeral, to whatever, to go to the pool, like I want to go to the pool today, or I'm going to sit with my book and take a nap, or go with, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's very important to give as much control to your loved one as possible in the decision-making process, for sure.
I agree.
And start as soon as possible, because we learned through experience, mm-hmm. the sooner you can start hospice and those kind of talks, the better.
Yeah.
Do you two have a special moment or memory that's very close to you with during the time that your mother had with her struggle with MSA?
How much longer do we have?
Plenty of time.
Well, definitely the walks.
Right. We had the first MSA awareness walk. So just to fill everyone in what was going on, that was, I think, very empowering for my mom. She didn't feel so alone, like everyone was clued in. And then the next year, we had the next walk, and just to see my mom out there walking and all her loved ones coming, playing her music she liked, and I think those were very special moments, seeing everyone come together to support somebody who has, so we're gonna cry, supported everybody.
Tasty time.
I think that was really, those are too special. And we've connected with another gal in Connecticut whose sister passed away of MSA, and she put on some MSA awareness walks. My mom spoke at those. She wrote a speech. She was at a checkpoint. Like, to see my mom doing that, like,
and then people would come up to her and cheer for her. Like, she was just so, like, such inspiration.
Here she's going through her own, as you know, go through a terminal illness, helping others. Like, it just,
that's her.
Yeah. Like, that was
dying, but still helping others.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whatever she could do. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And then her main thing, she's always taking care of people. She's always worried about other people. And through hospice, like, she had art therapy, and she could, you know, she couldn't write anymore, her handwriting. So she would redo songs, her favorite songs, with her own lyrics. And the art therapist printed out lyrics of her favorite songs. She made cards for all her loved ones. She wanted to make sure they had them and mail them all out. So, like, those moments are just, it just showed, like, who she was. And, like, we have that. We have those.
Now, oh no, are you two her only children?
Yes, that we know of. No.
I like her. I like Andrea.
Just us two.
That's great that she had you two, though.
We're lucky. Mm-hmm. We feel lucky.
Very, very blessed.
I want to thank you girls for coming on and sharing some great memories, great story with us.
Is there anything else you wanted to share about your mother Edith, either her life or be it during the MSA for our listeners?
Anything you want to?
I think we, right? Did we miss anything we wanted to share?
Yeah, just, you know, take the time to appreciate the people in your life, especially someone going through a terminal illness. Don't let that terminal illness, do not let MSA define who you are. It is just something you're going through. Live your life to the fullest. Let people learn from you. Like, this disease, I mean, I have stats in my head I can't think of right now of how rare it is. Talk about it. We have to raise awareness. We have to let people know what's going on. We have to share what we're going through. Talk about it. And for those out there taking care of someone with it, let them live their life. I tended to want to put my mom in a bubble, and I had to let her live her life and do everything out there. And I wanted people to see what MSA is, but I didn't want it to define who she was.
Agreed.
Well, girls, it's been wonderful talking to you. I know our listeners enjoyed your story. You had some great, great things to say. And thank you for taking your time out of your day and visiting with us.
Oh, thank you both for having us. And please know, reach out. If anybody wants to reach out to us, they're more than welcome to. We love to help what we went through, share experiences, or if they need just to talk through things, please reach out. We're happy to talk to anyone.
Yeah. No, thank you so much. It was actually, like, I think some of our conversations, like, at the end of my mom's life, like, we always say we hope we can give back some of the stuff we've learned through this experience with my mom. And you've definitely given us an avenue to get our word out, even if, like, one person who listens today
gets something from that.
Else learns about it. So
what you two are both doing is amazing.
Thank you.
And thank you for what you're doing.
Hey, you know what? We're all MSA Crusaders.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thanks again, girls. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
What makes me so proud about my mom living with MSA is she really hasn't stopped for a minute. It's kind of funny, like, we joke about her phone and her Fitbit getting all her steps in and awkwardness, but she never asks for help. And I know it pains her to ask for help, but she's always lived her best life.
I'm very proud of her determination
and integrity that she has with this disease. She's taken this disease head on and not let it define her, which not many people can do. A lot of people can learn from my mom.